The brain is a fascinating organ. It controls every single thing we do from this amazing control center in our heads. And no wonder a program about wonders of the brain would be popular. Jason Silva is the host of the Emmy-nominated television series Brain Games, seen on the National Geographic Channel. He joins us on the phone from New York City. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Jason, I not only do I think you have a cool job, but you have this, you call yourself an idea DJ and wonder junkie. I love that.
Yeah.
You're the only one on the planet with that job title.
You know, I'm a big Carl Sagan fan, and he coined the term wonder junkie when he wrote the novel that would then become the movie Contact.
Mm-hmm.
And he was describing the main character's sort of lust for mystery and curiosity and wonder. And so I thought the term wonder junkie was a perfect description of my existential angst and desire to understand the world. So there you go.
Okay, so the show looks at the latest research in neuroscience and psychology, and you take that information and create what you would call mind-bending experiments.
Yeah, we basically work with real brain experts, and we look at real lab experiments, and we work very closely with them to adapt these experiments into these interactive games that can be performed on volunteers on the show, and that can also be adapted into a visual format so that people at home can actually participate in the games.
Mm-hmm.
So that as a viewer, you can actually play these brain games or partake in these experiments, and then you get to have a kind of visceral experience of the misperceptions that your brain has, for example, and then you kind of learn by doing. So the games are a means to an end. They're a way to show you how much you don't perceive about the world, and then that creates a kind of curiosity, and then we explain to you what's going on.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about the first episode focused on color, and I took I took the little quiz online, and I got one wrong, so there was three questions. But
okay.
So I got a C. I got one wrong, and I got a C.
All right.
But talk a little bit about what that episode was about.
Well, you know, we all go about the world feeling a sense that we're sort of perceiving the world as it is. But in this instance, we look at specifically what color is and also what it isn't. And one of the amazing kind of takeaways is that color is not an actual objective feature of reality. You know, when you look at a quote-unquote green leaf, for example, you might say instead that that leaf is every color except green.
Mm.
Green is what's being reflected. It's the one color that's not being absorbed by the leaf. So the leaf is every color except green.
Yeah.
So that's like a crazy fact, for example. And, you know, just the idea that, you know, our brain is in a way constructing that colorful world. You know, we have photoreceptors that interpret signals and so on and so forth. It's just, you know, always the episodes always go back to this notion that what we call reality is kind of a co-production. It's your brain making inferences with limited signals.
Yeah, and of course, if you're colorblind, you've got a whole different set of things going on. That green leaf might not
be
green.
Exactly. And we actually had a test on the show last night to see if you were colorblind or not that people at home could play along with. And we had all these people tweet at us that were like, oh, my God, I didn't know I was colorblind. I just realized I was colorblind by watching your show. So that's kind of amazing.
That is amazing. And then, of course, a rainbow. The colors you see in a rainbow, they say it's what the primary colors, but is it?
Well, there you go. I mean, the rainbow is a perfect example of a sort of the mirage element, the sort of illusory element of color right there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you have another segment called Battle of the Ages. That sort of intrigued me, how our brains don't always act their age. And I'm going to, you know, in the press release, you sent out that you were going to guess our ages, and we had to look at two words in 15 seconds to make as many words as we can. And I came out under 30 years old, and I am so not under 30 years old. Maybe I was having a bad day.
Interesting. Maybe you were having a slow day. No, actually, that's one of the few experiments. Well, you know, what we're trying to do in the comparing different ages is that, you know, people have this idea that when your brain is young, it's super sharp and, you know, has an ability to learn really fast and so on and so forth. And then when you get older, things get more difficult to do, right?
Right.
And we wanted to show that there's all these ways in which when you get older, the brain gets better at mm-hmm. some things. And one of the things that obviously happens is that you've acquired more knowledge by the time you get a little bit older. You have a larger repository of information in that brain of yours. Therefore, certain experiments like these, you know, recombining letters in a word to create new words, we found that older brains did much better.
Mm-hmm.
They just can draw from a larger library of words when they're, you know, recombining those letters into mm-hmm. different words.
Yeah.
So these are ways in which the brain gets better over time. Pattern recognition, because mm-hmm. they've seen more, they have more to compare things to. So certain things like that.
Yeah. And also, I mean, you know, when you play sort of these brain games, you know, crossword puzzles and word jumbles and all of those things, it does make you quicker at them. I mean, I really, honestly, I thought I was going to score a lot higher because I play a lot of those games myself, but I guess I wasn't quick that day. But
the games are not really meant to tell people, oh, your brain is not as good or is better than. I mean, they're generally meant to highlight shortcomings that exist in all of our brains. Mm-hmm. So when people watch the show, if they feel, oh my God, I feel so silly when I did that, it's not really you feel silly. It's that you should feel like what you see is not always what you get.
Right.
Your brain does have real shortcomings that are universal, like that there are flaws in the design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You know? Well, and the other thing too, I was reading, just kind of checking some brain things out before our interview, and exercise makes you smarter. Who knew?
Yeah, well, you know, you get that rush of chemicals, the runner's high that people talk about. You know, I mean, the brain is like a muscle, right? So anytime mm-hmm. that you're stimulating it, whether, you know, you're doing aerobic exercise and flooding it with pleasure chemicals, or whether you're just exposing your brains to new activities, you know, you're stimulating it.
Mm. So do you know, is it true that we only use 10% of our brains?
No, it's not true. It's
not
one of those
true.
Wonderful urban myths that comes, I think, from an attempt to say that maybe we're not using our brain to its full potential. And so it's easy to use a metaphor like, oh, you're only using 10% of your brain. It might be more accurate to say all of your brain is being used. It's all like an integrated thing, but maybe we're not maximizing it to its full potential. And we realize that whenever we see a virtuoso in any capacity, you know, when we see like a Beethoven or a Mozart, we're like, okay, well, that's the potential, right?
Mm.
That's the potential that exists in the human being. So it makes all of us feel like we're using 10% of our brain, but
yeah.
No, that's not true.
So they had an interesting program on 60 Minutes. I don't know if you saw it. These people with these super memories, Mary Lou Henner, the actress Mary Lou Henner is one of them. Have you heard about this? They did a story, I don't know, a while back on there was sort of a handful of these folks who could remember. You give them a date and they can tell you what they were wearing, what happened on that day. Amazing memories. And and they followed up and they've actually found more people like that, even some children. But what I found really interesting, they were saying in the research that what they think is that they have sort of this pathway to the memories that maybe we all are capable of having, but we don't. But it's more than memory. It's like they're going back to that instant, all the emotion that they felt and whatever that was, could be 25 years ago. That just seems like so incredible, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, whatever is going on there at the physical level, if it's some kind of like, you know, mutation of some sort that endows them with these extraordinary cognitive capacities, it's certainly a glimpse of what's possible, right?
Mm-hmm, right?
Maybe it's something that we can figure out. Maybe we can emulate it, engineer it. Maybe it can be biologically selected for. Maybe we can create, you know, a sort of blood cell-sized computer augmentation thing mm-hmm. that we can install in our brains to make us operate like that.
Yeah.
You know, we can decide how vital we find that to be to the human experience, and perhaps we can reverse engineer it and give all of us that skill.
So, Jason, how did you end up with this job? What's your background? I mean, this is a pretty cool job that you've got.
I went to school for philosophy and film originally in the University of Miami and ended up working for Al Gore's TV station, Current.
Mm-hmm.
And that was this cable venture that Al Gore ran for a couple of years. And it was the citizen journalism kind of user-generated content. You could call it the HBO of the YouTube generation. And I spent 4 years there. And then I went off on my own, and I started making my own media on the Internet. And I wanted to make short films about subjects that I was interested in. So I created these kind of hyper-inspired monologue films that I narrated, exploring the coevolution of humans and technology. So I was really interested in futurism. I was really interested in how we use our machines to extend our capacities, how in a way we have become kind of prosthetic gods with our tools.
Mm-hmm.
And these films went viral on the Internet. And I spoke a lot of, you know, I've become a very, very busy keynote speaker. So I speak at a lot of tech conferences and et cetera, et cetera. I spoke at TED. And then National Geographic caught wind of my films, and they said, oh, you'd be great hosting our series on the brain and on brain science. And I was like, oh, yeah, I love that.
Who doesn't love brain science?
History.
Yeah. So how do you come up with the ideas for the experiments?
And we work with brain experts, and we have, you know, a writing team that we all, you know, brainstorm on different things that we're curious about. And then we find research that is connected to those topics, and then we figure out which of the experiments that have been done are adaptable to the TV format.
All right, so brains have been known to do some really unusual things, and one of the most unusual I ever heard of is this foreign accent syndrome. So take a listen to this.
I just went to sleep and woke up. I've got my mouth is all sore and swollen, and I talk funny.
Karen Butler has just been to the dentist to have some teeth pulled.
He says, well, it will all go away. You'll talk normal when the swelling goes down, and then I didn't.
To my ear, sounds like some sort of hybrid of English accent, some Irish or Gaelic intonations, and even some Scottish flavor.
I'm an American, born and bred. I was born in Bloomington, Illinois. I moved to Oregon when I was just a little tiny baby, and I've been in Oregon ever since.
Ms. Butler seems to have foreign accent syndrome.
Foreign accent syndrome is an extremely rare neurologic condition where, as a result of brain injury, a person has an altered speech pattern that sounds like a foreign accent.
The doctors involved believe Ms. Butler suffered a mild stroke during her dental procedure and that this stroke affected her speech.
They don't understand that you can't talk a foreign language. I cannot understand Russian or anything else.
Isn't that bizarre?
That's absolutely wild. I mean, I love these sort of unique and rare situations that these case studies that we find that just showcase the brain's wild capacities to sort of just surprise us, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And, it's just unbelievable. I mean, I don't even know what is going on there. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, see, there's another topic for one of your shows.
I know.
All right, so what are some of the urban myths besides the only using 10% of our brain that you've managed to dispel?
I think the people talk about multitasking. Mm-hmm. That's also a myth. You know, you can only really pay attention to one thing at a time, one task at a time. And when people claim to be multitasking, they're only just switching rapidly between tasks. That's all they're doing. Mm. But giving less attention to each task than if they were just focusing on one.
So we're multitasking, but we're not doing very well at each of those tasks.
Right.
So what happens in our brains when we sleep? We hear sleep is so important for our brains. What's going on there?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of sleep is still very much a mystery, and researchers don't always agree about what's going on. But I find that some of the most compelling evidence suggests that it's a kind of a sort of repair time for the brain. You know, I mean, the only thing that's sleeping or resting is your sense of self-awareness. Mm-hmm. Consciousness is resting. But, you know, your imagination is running wild in dream mode, right? Mm-hmm. Something's going on. And then the rest of your brain is running your body, right? We're making sure you're in homeostasis, making sure your heart is beating. I mean, the whole thing is still working, but people speculate that there's a kind of processing of stimuli that came in during the day and deciding what's going into long-term memory and what's going into short-term memory and then just cleaning out the pipes. Is what I've read. Like it's a detoxification moment. It's like it's rest and reset kind of thing.
All right. Well, another topic of one of your upcoming shows, we know stress can wreak havoc on our bodies, but it also can be a good thing. So tell us why.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's become very popular now, right? Because, you know, we think of stress and lifestyle, and of course, you know, when we're stressed out, our body releases cortisol, our body's acting like it's in a fight or flight mode, and it's on high alert, and so on and so forth, and that can have damaging effects upon our bodies. But there was a really recent TED Talk that was very popular, where a researcher was saying, you know, there's all these ways in which the way that we think about our stress actually determines the impact it has on us. So it's not just that, oh, being stressed often will cause havoc on your body, but if you decide that you are going to use your stress and leverage it in creative ways, or that your stress is just your body preparing you to deal with the situation, if you think about it in that way, if you change the context in which you think of your stress, that then all of a sudden the physiological impact completely changes, and all of a sudden you actually are healthier. And stress is actually not harmful all of a sudden. Mm. So it's just very interesting. The impact of stress is determined by the context in which you interpret it.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm wondering about interesting factoids about the brain, if there's one that really stands out to you. One that I read that I thought was really interesting is 100,000 miles of the little blood vessels. 100,000 miles, that's a lot of little blood vessels.
Yeah, well, the brain is the most complicated object in the universe. I mean, in terms of density and complexity, there are few things out in the observable universe that we have found that have the amount of density and complexity in a computer, in a brain, mm-hmm. except for maybe the microchip in your computer. The microchip in your computer has more energy per second per gram flowing through its corridors than the surface of the sun does in terms of concentrated density of energy. Hmm. But so imagine the brain and microchips. That's about it in terms of complexity and density.
Yeah. Jason Silva is the host of the Emmy-nominated television series Brain Game, seen on National Geographic's channel Monday nights at 9 p.m. Jason, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you. That was fun. Thanks.
And now we'll check back in with the weather forecast. A few minutes ago, WCAI's Elsa Partan spoke with meteorologist Phil Burt of CapeCodWeather.net and asked him what's happening right now.
The main storm system is now starting to actually pull away from the area, and the main precipitation shield is collapsing towards the coast. But we're actually getting into these bands now of ocean effect snow, so the intensity of snow has actually picked up a little bit within the last hour. And we're still, you know, we've got a couple hours to go of this sort of steady, heavier snow, and then things will start to wind down as we get into late morning.
What are the winds doing right now?
Gusts have been generally around 40 miles per hour. Nantucket did gust to 51 miles per hour a little bit earlier. And Hyannis, I believe, gusted to about 45 or 46 miles per hour. And winds will continue right around 40, 45 miles per hour through the afternoon. They'll start to come down more towards 30, 35 miles per hour as we get towards the evening, but really pretty windy throughout the entire day.
What snow totals have you seen so far?
Generally, I've seen between about 6 and 8 inches, something like that, although I've seen some reports closer to 10 inches up on the Upper Cape. I think we'll tack on several more inches before it's all set and done. And generally, I think, as a region-wide total, we'll be probably between 9 and maybe 13 or 14 inches, quite a wide range because some of these bands have been very narrow and we're getting little intense bands of very heavy snow. And then if you're outside of that band, you may be kind of looking at, a lighter snow, whereas a neighborhood or two away is in a heavier snow band. So a little bit of variation, but generally we'll come out pretty close to where we were expected to be on this one.
What kind of temperatures should we expect in the coming hours?
Well, readings right now are falling back through the lower 20s. We had climbed into the middle 20s overnight. Winds are starting to come back around to the north, so that's pulling that Arctic air, which is off to our northwest, back onto the Cape. So temperatures will probably just continue to fall through the day down into the upper teens. And then really the next several days, just bitter cold. We'll be down to single digits tonight, struggling to 20 degrees tomorrow, back into the single numbers the next night. And then by Friday, I think we're holding in the teens. So a really cold stretch here.
CapeCodWeather.net's Phil Burt. Thanks so much.
Anytime. Thank you.
And we'll have a link to Phil's website on our website. Elsa joins me in studio now. You heard him. Chilly temperatures until maybe the weekend.
And that's a warning that we got from Frank O'Loughlin from Barnstable County Emergency Planning folks, which is that it's a time to think about frozen pipes. If you've got any pipes that are kind of exposed to a thin wall, maybe turn that tap on, let the water drip, or warm it up as best you can. He says a lot of damage happens because of frozen pipes.
Right. And, we haven't heard a lot about power outages. And again, this is similar to that last storm. It's that light, fluffy snow. NSTAR really wasn't anticipating, or National Grid for Nantucket residents.
And right now, the NSTAR outage map says 2 outages in Truro, 2 outages in Falmouth, 7 in Plymouth.
Yeah, well, it'd be a chilly time to be without your power, wouldn't it? All right, so again, we've got heavy snow, blizzard conditions, or blizzard warning until 1 o'clock this afternoon. If you don't have to go out and about, why not stay in where it's nice and warm? We'll have weather reports throughout the day with our newscast. You can also go online, capeandislands.org, and check our weather blog. I'm Indy Todd. Thanks so much for listening.
Amy Vins produces The Point, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.